Welcome to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community Radio Show. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG is committed to bringing awareness to organizations in our community. This show highlights local and surrounding area nonprofits to help listeners learn how they can have an impact in our community and is for educational purposes only. We believe that helping the community is always positive and recognize the importance of providing a voice. Every organization highlighted is a qualified 501c3. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Welcome. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for Milwaukee's philanthropic community, where our goal is to educate, inspire, and impact our listening audience as we highlight people and organizations who are doing great things in our community. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellenbecker Investment Group. My question to start our show this morning is, how many of you like to travel, whether that's nationally or internationally? Well, for those of you that know me, I love to travel and meet new people, experience different cultures, understand how other people live. And I've been to over 100 international destinations over the last 40 years. And I have to say, I've learned so much in every place that I visited. People often ask me what my favorite destination was. And that really depends on what I was looking for. Was it a trip with lots of history, or was I looking for an adventure trip or a trip with a lot of nature? Was it an impact trip? That makes a difference for my answer. But if I had to say what my overall favorite destination was, it would have to be my trip to the Holy Land back in 1999. We traveled on to Egypt afterwards, which was totally awesome for different reasons. But what I loved about the Holy Land was that I was walking in places that patriarchs, matriarchs, disciples of the Bible walked. We went to Bethlehem, Jerusalem, Nazareth. We took a boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. We walked in the Garden of Gethsemane. We saw the site where they say Jesus was born and the garden tomb where they say he died. I mean, to have walked places where Peter, James, and John, Paul, Jesus walked was absolutely life-changing for me. And I would encourage anyone who's interested in biblical history to make that trip. It was fantastic. But I learned that I don't have to travel to the Holy Land to learn about biblical history and its relevance. Have any of you been to the Grand Canyon before? If so, how many of you learned about its historical accuracy from a biblical perspective? And how about from a scientific perspective? Sound interesting? Well, you're going to hear today about a ministry that was founded by a guy who holds degrees in both physics and engineering. It's truly fascinating to hear a scientific perspective when it comes to biblical history. So, welcome to the show today, Jay Siegert, founder and CEO of the Starting Point Project.
It's an honor to be on the program. Thank you for inviting me.
It's an honor to have you. I actually met you at a C-Suite for Christ monthly gathering, and what you were saying was so interesting to me. And then you talked about this trip to the Grand Canyon and what we would learn, and I'm like, I'm all over that. I want to go. That sounds so interesting and awesome. And it was. But let's learn a little bit more about the Starting Point Project specifically and your mission.
Sure. The main mission is we help Christians better understand and better defend the Christian worldview, but we also offer a very, very gracious challenge to the sincere skeptic. That's the main focal point of it, and we do that through giving talks, presentations, traveling around the country. I've been spoken in 9 other countries, and we have lots of resources with videos and articles, and I've written 3 books, and so a lot of resources that are all focused on, again, a defense of the Christian worldview.
And then what's the meaning behind the ministry name? What's the meaning behind the Starting Point Project?
Sure, it's kind of interesting. Part of the meaning is to get people to ask, what is the meaning behind the Starting Point Project? And it's very effective because you don't really know. And we kind of wanted people to not know. We wanted them to ask us so that we could define it. And here's what it is. Every single person, no matter who they are, whether they're a Christian, atheist, Muslim, Buddhist, anyone, everyone starts somewhere with their beliefs. It's impossible to not start somewhere. So everyone starts somewhere with their belief system. Christians happen to start with the belief that God exists and the Bible is the Word of God. And you use that as your foundation then to define everything else, what science and logic are, philosophy, history, ethics, morality, all those things are defined by our starting point. Someone else might have a different starting point. And then you can ask them, hey, what is your starting point? What have you chosen? They probably don't even realize they have one. But if they think it through, they'll come up with something. And then you can just ask them, hey, what made you choose that as your starting point? And why do you think that that will help you accurately define everything else around you? So you get into these really nice conversations. It doesn't have to be caustic or argumentative.
Wonderful. Well, again, great way to start a conversation. You talk about this idea of origin determines purpose. What do you mean by that?
Pretty straightforward. Sometimes in my presentations, I'll show a picture of a piece of equipment, a technical piece of equipment, and ask people, do you know what the purpose of this piece of equipment is? And most people don't. But if they knew what the origin was of that piece of equipment, they could figure that out because its origin will determine what its purpose is. And I show this vibration probe, proximity probe from this large piece of industrial equipment. The point is, its origin determines what its purpose is. And then I tell the audience, your origin determines your purpose. Wherever you think you came from, that will determine and set what you believe your purpose is. If you think everything's here just by some freak of nature accident, just there was some big bang for no reason out of nowhere, but it happened, and then planets formed, and then life formed in a single cell, and then we came from the single cell over a few billion years, there's no purpose to that. So there would be ultimately no purpose for your own life. However, if you think this universe and life were actually designed and created, there would be a purpose for that, and therefore there is also a purpose for your life. So it makes a big difference. Your origin, whatever you think about origin, will determine what you believe your purpose is.
Well, very interesting. I'm curious, what do you specifically believe are the only two options that we have for explaining life and this universe?
Sure. I kind of focus on trying to keep everything very simple. I could go really deep and get really technical, but you lose a lot of people and it's not very practical for them. So I say, we have two options. When you're thinking about life in the universe itself, there are only two options. And you could present this in any public school system. Either all of this around us, the universe and life itself, came into existence all on its own, or it didn't. Those are the only two options. That is not a religious statement. That is logic. Those are the only two options. And then you could do good science and research to see, is what we're looking at evidence that, yep, everything just happened on its own for no reason over a long period of time? Or would there be an indication like, wow, it looks like there's purpose here. There's a complex design that doesn't happen on its own. And so two questions, it either happened by itself or it didn't. And you can teach that without getting into the religious details.
Well, what do you say when people claim that science is the only way of determining truth?
Well, it's kind of interesting because we've lost something called critical thinking skills and we need to regain that. But that's kind of an intimidating statement when someone says science is the only way of determining truth, meaning don't look at the Bible. That's an outdated religious book, you know, contradictions, errors, on and on and on. You have to go to science. You want truth? Science is the only way of determining truth. Well, here's the response. I would just ask that person, how did you determine that? How did you determine that science is the only way of determining truth? Did you use science to determine that? If you did, that's circular reasoning. You can't use science to prove science. But if you didn't use science, apparently there are other ways of determining truth because you yourself used one. So it's a statement that initially is intimidating, but when you think it through, it's self-defeating and contradictory.
I'm sure people like just hesitate after that.
Makes their head spin a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess that's true. Well, how could we possibly truly know who or what created the universe?
Sure. In short version, when you look at the world around you and you're looking at whether it's a monarch, butterfly, DNA, whatever it is, you see incredible complexity. And again, I'm going to skip the details for now with the short interview. You can see all this unbelievable complexity, especially with DNA and all that. And you could very logically conclude that can't happen by accident. But you wouldn't know who created it, why they created it, what they want from you, and what truly happens to you when you die for eternity. You can't get those details from looking at nature itself. You can come to the conclusion it's not an accident, but you wouldn't know who created it or why. The only way you could know is if whoever did create it left us a note saying, hello, I'm the one who did it. Here's why I did it. Here's what happened to it. Here's what happens to you when you die. It just happens to be that the Bible makes those claims. Now, I could write a book tonight making all those claims. I just couldn't back it up. But the Bible gives us ways to back it up. It shows us many lines of evidence that these guys who wrote this physically did not make it up. They were inspired by God in what they wrote because of its internal consistencies, historical accuracy, prophetic accuracy, and scientific accuracy.
Gosh, we could easily go on and on for a long time. I know we're not going to have enough time in this interview to capture everything, but we have to actually take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to continue to learn more about Jay and his passion for science and creation and some really interesting things he's learned in his almost 40 years of research. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG. Milwaukee's philanthropic community with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm talking with CEO and founder Jay Siegert from the Starting Point Project. So, Jay, you've done a lot of research over the last 40 years or so. What's one of the most interesting things that you've learned?
Sure. This is definitely up there near the top. People want evidence that God created things. They say, no, everything just happened by itself. There's no evidence. Well, here's just one example that we don't have time to flesh all the way out. But when we look at the DNA, it is very complex. And one of the things that makes it more complex than anything from nature could explain is it's how the information is written on the DNA. If you saw a message that you could not only read forwards, but you could also read backwards, that would catch your attention. If you saw something you could read forwards, and then when you read it backwards, it was an additional piece of information, that's even more interesting. Like, wow. Well, our DNA has information that you can read both forwards and backwards, but it's not just a few words. Up to entire chapters of complex instructions are in our DNA. So really, really quickly, you read a section of your DNA one direction. It's a set of very, very complex instructions that code to make certain proteins that carry out a certain function in your body. Now you read it backwards. It's a completely different set of instructions coding to make completely different proteins carrying out a completely different function in your body. Two messages, forwards and backwards. Two points with that. Number one, particles banging together in nature could never create a complex information system that you can read forwards and backwards. And secondly, even if you did have that, if you copy it over time and you make random changes to it, which is what mutations are, you will not make that system better and better. You will destroy it faster and faster. And that's just one level of information. We have overlapping information. We have embedded information. We have encrypted information. We have 3D information and other levels of information all in the DNA screaming, this was designed. This is not an accident of nature.
I want to add, too, that I learned at the C-Suite for Christ meeting that you're part of this, I don't know if you'd call it a council, or you're part of this group or this this meeting of the minds, whatever you want to call it. Just share with us real quickly that is.
And the group's called Logos Research Associates. Logos is Greek for word or information. God spoke things into existence. And this is the world's largest group of scientists who are Christians and creationists. And I've been on the board for about 11 years. About a year and a half ago, they asked me to become president. So some of the world's leading scientists, just two guys real quick, Dr. John Sanford from Cornell University. He's famous for having invented the gene gun, inserts genes into the DNA. And then Dr. John Baumgartner, PhD geophysicist. He's built the world's best 3D computer simulation of plate tectonics, and even secular geologists use that to see how plates of the earth are moving. So that's the group of guys I'm involved with doing cutting edge research, and then I get to convert their findings into English.
Because we wouldn't know otherwise. Sure. I mean, it's fascinating, obviously, your background and all this information that you have that you can make it easy for people to understand. I think that's great. So what do you say to people when they claim that there's no evidence that the Bible is the Word of God?
Sure. Best thing you can do and make people make claims is actually listen to them. What are they saying? So when someone says that to me, I ask a follow-up question. What would you accept as evidence that God wrote the Bible? What would that look like in your mind if you saw A, B, and C? That would definitely be evidence. And then they've said to me, oh, I don't know, but I know there's no evidence. Wait a minute. If by your own admission, you don't even know what the evidence would look like, how do you know it doesn't exist? In fact, if you don't have criteria that you use to judge what counts and what doesn't count, we can't even have this conversation. And so people make the claim that there's no evidence, but they don't even know what they're looking for. And then I offer some categories of evidence, like I mentioned before. If God actually did author a book, I would expect it to be internally consistent. It wouldn't contradict itself. Historically accurate, prophetically accurate, and scientifically accurate. The Bible passes all four of those tests, and there's tons and tons of examples in each of those categories. So again, when someone makes a claim, they often are just repeating something someone else told them, but they don't really understand much about it.
Mm-hmm. So good. So just remember that if somebody challenges you, you know, what does it take that what do you need to see in order to make it be some kind of evidence for you? So very good, very good information. So you lead tours of the Grand Canyon. I went on one last year in October. It was great. I learned so much. In fact, my girlfriend and I that I went with, we came back. We just could not shut up because we just were like, oh my gosh, there's just so much. It's just like, again, blows your mind. But how does that fit with the mission of your ministry?
Sure. Well, the big picture of our ministry is, again, helping Christians better defend the Christian worldview. And one thing about the Christian worldview is biblical narrative of history from creation all the way up till today. Well, one of the things in the Old Testament even skeptics are familiar with is there's an account of a flood, a global flood, which a lot of skeptics make fun of. And it is super, super easy to make fun of the flood story if you avoid two things. You avoid what Scripture actually says about the flood, and you don't take a look at science. But if you study what Scripture says describing that global flood in Genesis 6 through 8, and then you take a look at the science, you're like, oh my word, this thing actually happened. So we take people to the Grand Canyon because it's one of the best places on the planet to see evidence for yourself. There was a worldwide flood. It is physically impossible for that river, Colorado River, to have carved out that canyon. 900 cubic miles of sediment gone. Even if the river had carried the sediments out, it would have dumped them off at the end in a delta. Well, can you imagine the huge delta that would be there with 900 cubic miles of sediment? It's not there. It wasn't dragged out solely by the Colorado River over 6 million years. It was catastrophically carved out, pushed out into the continental shelves, into the oceans, and remaining water was trickling through the groove. The river didn't create the canyon. The canyon created the river. So we take people to the canyon. You can see for yourself. We talk about the layers and the landscape, give them evidences. We're walking along the rim. Next day, we're on the river. As you know, you've been through all this. So mm-hmm. The point is not to just show them a big hole in the ground, but to say, you know what? You actually can trust the Bible. In fact, everything in the Bible, including the flood account.
Mm, yeah. It's, again, I'm telling you that there's just so much that you learn on this trip. It's fascinating. And then you come back and you're like, I need to learn more. You know, where can I go to see this guy, you know, to get more information from him? But give us an idea of some places where you speak and how much you charge for your engagements.
Sure. All over the United States, again, 9 other countries, including Russia and Fiji and Oxford. And so just all over the place. And we don't charge anything. No cost for
did
the
you hear
engagement.
That? Yeah. Did you hear that, audience?
For 39 years I've been speaking, we don't charge a penny. We do ask that travel expenses be covered. So if you just get me somewhere, that's nice. But there's never a charge, whether I speak one time or 10 times, never a charge for the engagements themselves. Again, anywhere in the country or out of the country, you just have to get a hold of us, and we'll see if we can fit it in the calendar.
Mm, and I imagine there's a lot of demand for you speaking all over the place.
It's kind of bad. I gave 227 talks last year.
Wow. Well, what are some of the more interesting places that you've spoken?
Well, one of them was Russia. I never envisioned myself. I'm not a huge international traveler, so I was a little uncomfortable over there, especially you can not only not read the signs, you can't pronounce anything. You'd hurt yourself if you try. They got characters I've never seen before. But it was interesting being in that communistic country, being able to minister and talk about Christianity and the Bible and the gospel message, which was nice. But it's just nice being in a totally different culture, having an appreciation. This is their lives. This is where they live. And so I was very humbled to be able to be there. So there, speaking in public schools in Fiji, we were up in the deep interior, driving on army trucks for hours, banging around to get to these schools. Just a lot of other places as well that are just fascinating. I'm just honored to be able to speak anywhere, anytime.
And I especially appreciate your thoughts about Russia, because I'm reading a book right now talking about, I think there's 8 or 9 different women who they talk about their story and the hardships that they went through going out and talking to people about their faith, and it blows my mind. I mean, anybody think they have it rough here? You know, go to some of these places, and Russia was one of those places. It's just unbelievable. How do you handle people who are not only skeptical, but, and you talked a little bit about this before, but what if somebody is actually angry or disruptive? What do you do?
Really, I try to see their heart and get past whatever verbiage they're using. So one time at a state university, gave a talk, opened up for Q&A, four atheists stood up immediately, and they were angry. They just went off on me, and they were actually very rude. When they finished, I looked at them and I said, you know what, I'm just honored you're here. I cannot believe you took time out of your day to hear me go blah, blah, blah. And the questions you just raised, those are great questions. So thank you for bringing those up so everyone could hear them, and then everyone will get to hear the answers as well. I didn't say anything else about them, just answered the questions graciously, and it totally diffused the situation. One of them came up to me afterwards and he said, you got to come back and share some more. That was an atheist, mm-hmm. You know, because they're there, they're seeking. They've had life experiences, a lot of hurts, and they got a lot of really good questions. Why shouldn't they have a good, gracious answer? So that's how I respond. I try to ignore how angry they might be. They're passionate about something, and they're giving me an opportunity to address it, and I'm honored by that.
Mm. Yeah, I think we can all take a lesson from that, right? Maybe apply that to your children.
Sure.
If your children ask for the 17th time, why, they're searching. They want an answer and respond respectfully and graciously. So if someone listening wants to see some of your free resources, because you have many of them on your website, have you speak at an event or to take a trip to the Grand Canyon like I did, what's the best way for people to get connected?
Sure. Directly at our website, which is thestartingpointproject.com. Thestartingpointproject.com. Most of our resources are free. We currently have 34 streaming videos. We used to have DVDs that we'd sell. That's old school now, and I told my board I want everything to be free. So all the videos are free. We'll be recording 8 or 10 more this year. As we do them, they get added to the website. So you can go right to the website, thestartingpointproject.com. Watch all those for free. I've got free podcasts every Friday that comes out. We've got about 58 so far. We've reached the top 5% in the world of podcasts. So you can get those directly through the website. We have a YouTube channel with all of our videos. There's a lot of articles that I've written. The only thing that we sell are the 3 books that I've written. The book I wrote on creation. I've been told by some of the world's leading scientists, I think it's the best overview that's out there, which I was honored to hear. And then 2 other books. We sell those because it costs us a lot to print them and ship them and produce them. But even people who become monthly supporters of the ministry, we give them the books for free. So virtually everything is free. And again, the website, thestartingpointproject.com, you can get a hold of us for speaking engagements as well.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jay, for being here. Again, audience, I know how much I have learned in the short amount of time that I've known you and taking the Grand Canyon trip. I could listen to you all day. I mean, I just think the way that you approach questions and the research and, you know, all these things is just really fascinating. And so I would encourage you to check out his website, thestartingpointproject.com, and reach out to have him come and speak. So thank you for being here today, Jay.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You're welcome. So not surprisingly, Jay is in demand for speaking and sharing his knowledge at many places around the country and even the world. When we return, we'll learn more about a special place just a little north of here where Jay has had the opportunity to share his knowledge. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And my next guest today is Dennis Seiler, Partnership Director from the Living Waters Bible Camp. Welcome to the show today, Dennis.
Jill, it is such a privilege to be here. And it is just really good that when you come to visit our camp, please don't go north much. We're really very west of here, about 100 miles. So I hope that you'll get to the right place.
Right. It was true for just, what did you say, 5 miles you're going north?
5 miles north and 120 miles west, yeah.
Well, it is still a little bit north, so yeah, give give myself some cut myself some slack there. But you've been the partnership director at Living Waters Bible Camp for 33 years now. Congratulations.
I've been the partnership only for 2 years.
Okay.
I was the director for 33 years.
Wow. That's really something. Well, give us some history then, because okay. I'm sure you have plenty of it. Give us some history about the camp. When did it get started? Yeah.
The camp started it actually started prior to the first building. The original people that lived on the farm had a dream, a vision someday of having a camp on the property. So they planted, along with tons of volunteers in the Westby, Wisconsin area, they planted over 40,000 trees so that it would be a camp someday for youth. And then in 1970, they started building their first building on a guy named Irwin Lutz, his property. They donated all that first property for the camp. And it was amazing to see all the work that's been put in it. Today, we have over 20 buildings, a couple of houses, and it's an amazing property where there's very, very few weekends or days that it's not being used.
Well, there must be a lot of water on the property then, since the name is Living Waters.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. We have had water in the valley sometimes because there's a dry wash in the middle that when it rains hard, then we got a little bit of water. But otherwise, it's amazing that there's no water, little or no water. There's three natural springs there, and the springs are incredibly high flow rates of over 500 gallons a minute, but also very, very clear water. So the name, there's no pool, there's no lake, there's no river. It's some three beautiful springs in a small stream, and that's it.
And again, you are just south of La Crosse, correct?
Right.
Okay, because people know La Crosse being a beautiful, beautiful area right there in the water. Well, tell us what makes this camp special.
Well, one of the things that makes it special is the things that we don't have at camp, like the lake and the pool and stuff, they're all nearby. So we go canoeing, we go tubing, we go fishing, we go to the pool in Westby, who are very gracious to work with us. But then some things that make it special, it's in a peaceful valley. It's we're in the driftless area, unlike this side of the state, where there's coulees and ridges. It's about 200 feet deep valley. And so when you get there, it's kind of like all the worries of the world are left behind at the top of the hill. And so just its location is special. And then our youth camps have just a lot of great camp activities that you see at a lot of camps. But there's a special focus on teaching and training of servant leadership through the Bible, through intentional relationships, and through incredible learning experiences in God's creation. So each year we have a new theme. And that theme about creation teaches us different points of God's word about his creation and about Christian character. Like last year was mighty servants. So that was about serve ants. So it's insects. And this year is created for worship. So that's day 7 of creation. Okay. God rested for worship. And then 1 year we do satisfy your thirst, thus water. And 1 year we do firmly planted plants. And so each year it's kind of like we look at what is happening in our culture and what in God's creation can we use to teach it?
Okay. Well, talking about that servant leadership training, what is that like?
The servant leadership is, a lot of it's done out at the fort, but it's done through team building. It's done through groups serving each other, through making a meal. I'll teach on servant leadership, then I'll go make their breakfast. And then the next one, the guys will make the meal for the girls, and the next one, the girls for the guys, and then they start learning servant leadership. That we go into the town, the community of Westby, and do servant projects there, the nursing home, the community. We've even painted some of the buildings. If you ever get into Westby, there's this beautiful building. It's red, big W on it, and that was painted by our group. And so it's just been kind of cool to serve the community like that and give people a hands-on experience of servant leadership.
Well, again, it's one thing to talk about servant leadership, right? But it's another to be the boots on the ground and to model servant leadership, I think. Yeah. How much training does your staff get then?
The staff, the newbie, they're going to have 2 weeks of training called Foundation Camp. The summer staff, the people commit the whole summer, an extra 10 days plus 4 days at the end of the summer to help them go back. And then every year, everybody has to have a day of renewal, a day of an extra training of what's going on in the culture. And so there's training all the time going on for everybody.
Okay. Well, how many campers and groups can come to your camp?
Well, campers, we take about 100 campers in the summertime. And with that, we'll have 80 staff, right? We're teaching servant leadership. We take all kinds of kids. So we have a lot of staff that are trained extra for helping hurting kids. And that high staff to camper ratio helps us to accomplish our training goals.
Okay. And then all kids can come to your camp, right? Not just church kids?
Yeah. We have the full variety. We have probably 70% of our kids are from church backgrounds of a full variety, and about 30% of the kids don't come from any churches. They just hear about it through the community or their friends, and so they bring them. And so it's a full gamut of kids.
Okay. And the big question, how much does it cost?
Oh,
we got to get to that question, Dennis.
I'm not the director anymore, so I don't worry about the price. No, I think we're getting up close to $500. But what's cool with that is that includes all the programming, regular programming, the crafts, the meals. The only thing extra is still is paintball and horseback, because not every kid can get time to do that, and the camp store. But with that, we have an incredible scholarship program. So if people want some help to come, we've never had a lack of scholarship funds to be able to help so that every kid can come to camp.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, you mentioned before about this fort. So tell us what the fort is all about.
Oh, the fort is just a great setting. It's set in a beautiful area that is surrounded by streams, trees, hills. It looks like a fort from the Old West, but it's built with logs and two lookout towers. There's 6 covered wagons that sleep, 8 campers each. And it's just a fun outdoor experience, cooking over a campfire, rugged and challenging. You have to walk a little bit to the bathrooms, but the serenity and the team building that happens, the serving one another, it's all natural. You don't have to make up programs to make it happen.
Sounds really nice. Sounds really nice. Just to get out and away from technology and just the craziness that might be going on at home, and just practice presence and peace and calm. How wonderful. Well, you obviously embrace the value and the benefits of being in the outdoors, and then you help campers understand how everything fits together from a creation standpoint, which I love that part of it. We're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll take a deeper dive into that. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Julie Conimo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's philanthropic community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations, and I'm talking in our last segment today with Dennis Seiler, Partnership Director at Living Waters Bible Camp. And actually, Jay Siegert has decided to stick around and lend some commentary towards the end of the segment. But Dennis, what are some of these incredible creation trips that you lead in the Midwest?
Well, one of my favorite, and you talked about finding information similar to the Grand Canyon. And if you go to our own Wisconsin Dells, according to Dr. Steve Austin, who's one of the greatest geologists, both secular and sacred, today, he would tell you that the Wisconsin Dells is the second greatest display of a worldwide flood in anything in the United States except for the Grand Canyon.
Really?
Only second to the Grand Canyon.
Well, I didn't know that. Learned something new today.
So Jay's been on those trips with us as well, and but we try to do at least 2 to 4 a year. If you ever want to jump in on one, that would be awesome. Because it's so incredible to see the Dells, and everybody sees the beauty and the awe of God. You can't help but escape. But I love that trip because it also, you can put your hand on a 500 million years of missing information in the side of the, in a couple different places in the Dells. Mm. And so you have to answer that question, like, what happened? Mm-hmm. What happened? How did it get here? Yeah. And it's in multiple places around the world. But even if you go to the Grand Canyon, and this is why you need to go to the Dells with us, the Grand Canyon, you got to take about 3 days going down the river to go touch it. Or there's a couple places you can take a drive. Here, you walk a couple hundred yards and you're there. And so it's, but the beauty is great. You get to see mud flows and Pudding Rock. But then this year in Memorial Day weekend, we're actually planning a trip to the UP, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. They call it God's Country up there. I think it's well named because the it's almost like you're in Colorado. Because, but up there, it's multiple lava flows. And that's where the copper deposits, we're going to look for copper with metal detectors. We're going to be looking for uprolites. Do you know what a uprolite is yet?
I do not.
Okay.
But I'll learn, right?
Right. And the uprolites, for someone who's never done, you're walking along the beach of Lake Superior with black lights, and it looks like the rocks are the embers of a fire. And God has made them, and they've only seen them since 2017, so it's a relatively new discovery, so they're a lot of fun to find. And then we're going to look for agates in the daytime. We're going to go to copper mines. We're going to go to the guys who process copper. We're going to top experienced people and resources to look at copper and the wonders of God's creation. And then we did do a trip to Mount St. Helens, and Jay was on that one as well, and that was exciting. And we had, I think, over 50 geology researchers and pastors on that trip, along with 100 other people.
Wow.
And so it was an incredible trip. Second, you know, it just, it was its 40th anniversary. And so that was really cool. And the thing that's there is you have hands-on evidence of a rapid forming landforms. It took less than 2 years to make a canyon that's about a 20th of the size of the Grand Canyon. So it shows a young earth display. And Jay's partnered with us a couple of times each year. And
yeah, I think there are so many wonderful places in nature that we could experience, both locally and across the country. But to ask that question, why, and to dig deeper on how did this get here and why is this, I think that's important. Do a lot of nature groups come to your camp?
Yeah. We've been really, really privileged to be able to have, over the years, to have people like Trout Unlimited and the National Wild Turkey Federation, the Women in the Outdoors. We have schools, we have church groups, all come for nature creation programs.
There's a group called Women in the Outdoors?
Yeah.
Cool. I got to look at that one.
They do a great job because they do like 20 different programs. We'll run half of them for them. I remember doing beginning archery, you know, with 20 women who've never picked up a bow. At the end of 2 hours, they were all shooting within a 6-inch circle at 20 yards.
Oh, my goodness. My husband would love that.
It was crazy to see how they could progress and how they never picking up a bow and to do that. And we got all done. I said, you know, the thing about life is that someday you're going to die and you're going to stand before a great God and he's going to say, why should I let you in? And you're going to say, well, I did all these good things. And he's going to say, but you're shooting at the wrong target.
Oh.
So you can have all the right form, the right equipment, but is our eyes fixed on the designer creator himself?
Very good. Gosh. Well, I would love to do that archery thing, but I'm not shooting an animal. I mean, I think that's why my husband would want to take me out to shoot the bow. And I'm, nope. I'll shoot it at a target. Hopefully the right target, right? You just got back from Mexico, I understand. What did you guys do there?
Well, we go every year in March. It's the first full week of March. And we just have had a great opportunity to work with Amigos in Cristo, which means Friends in Christ. And they have a growing outreach to kids that can't afford public schools or need help after school. Now, remember, this is Juarez, Mexico, and that's where a lot of our people are trying to come across the border. I want you to know that very few people are coming across the border illegally, at least through there, are from Mexico. Most of them are Venezuelan and Haitians and other countries around the world. But the people there that live in Juarez have to deal with all that, that influx of people with no place to live, no place to work, no place to eat. And so this is a program that teaches academics as well as Bible, teaches art classes of various forms. It provides a meal every day, which for many of them, it's their only meal they get that day. And so there's a lot of heartbreak and poverty there. And we give the teachers a break for the week by doing a VBS program as well. And then this year, we helped to start the building of an addition to one of their schools. We are working on three schools already, three compounds at each handle, about 100 to 150 people a day. And And these are programs, by doing this, we've seen that there's 1 in 10 kids end up either, for the girls, in the sex trade of either selling themselves or being stolen to be sold, or the guys ending up in the gangs and the cartels. 9 out of 10 will typically end up in that world. Through the kids going through this program, it's 1 out of 10 end up going through that. And so the teachers that are there, they're only doing $89 to $120 a week is all they get paid. And they work hard, and they're dedicated people. I get to do a lot of training for all their staff, team building, and working through issues and difficulties. And so that's just an incredible experience to be able to go in. Wow. We'd love for others to go. You can go with us, too. Yeah. You said you like to travel. Yeah. I bet you've not been to Juarez.
I have not. I've been to Mexico a number of times, but not Juarez. Yeah. And just the stuff that you share, you know, we often like to hear about proof of performance, mm-hmm. right? You know, our impact stories, and what you just talked about, it speaks to that. So thank you for sharing that. Well, it's easy to see why you and Jay have a great relationship. So, Jay, you've partnered with the camp a couple times each year. You've gone with Dennis on some of these trips. What's it like for you to be working with Dennis and others at Living Waters Bible Camp?
Well, it's been a complete privilege. There are a lot of Christian camps out there, but I think what makes Living Waters so different is, yes, what they have to offer, but Dennis has done an amazing job. He won't say as much, but I can. He just makes a huge difference in the youth that come there. They don't just come and say, isn't this cool, nature, and then they go home. He applies it to something very practical and character building in their life. So that's been amazing. And then, you know, one of the moments on the tour that we had done together with Mount St. Helens, that was really cool. I've lectured on Mount St. Helens for many years. I had not been out there. And so just one minor detail. So yeah, it erupted in 1980, but 2 years later, March of 1982, there was a little bit of a burp out of the cone. It had been sitting there dormant pretty much for 2 years. But a little burp came out of the cone, and a little mud flow came down the side of Mount St. Helens, and it carved out a 1/40th scale Grand Canyon in solid rock in 1 day. I've lectured on that before, but it was so cool to actually be there and see it. So now when I give my presentations, I can show pictures. Here's me standing, you know, in this canyon that was carved out in 1 day. Well, if that happened in 1 day, when you look at the Grand Canyon, it doesn't need millions of years. So it's really cool to be connected with Dennis and to be speaking at the camp and to be associated with the trips that they do.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, there's, again, we just never have enough time to get to all the things that we want to get to, but I like to always end our interviews with a call to action. So if somebody's listening and they want to check out your programs, your special events, how to sign up for different things, what's the best place for people to go to get connected?
Well, it's lwbc.org, livingwatersbiblecamp.org.
Well, that's simple.
We made it simple so I could remember it. So hopefully others too.
And others too, right?
But everything is, if you type in that and then you type in your keyword, it'll take you to the website. To me, it's just incredible how a young person did this for us and made it a very smooth website.
Okay. Well, wonderful. I want to thank my guest today, Dennis Seiler, Partnership Director at the Living Waters Bible Camp, and Jay Siegert, founder of the Starting Point Project. I appreciate you both sharing how you're making a difference in our community and beyond by the work that you're doing. So thank you both for participating today.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. If you'd like further information about what we talked about today, you can reach out directly to either of our guests for more information. If they can't help you, I'm sure they can at least point you in the right direction to someone who can. If you know of a great organization doing great work in our community that you think would be a great guest for the show, I'd ask that you email me at jill@ellenbecker.com, or you can call our office at 262-691-3200. Tune in next Sunday morning at 10 to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community to learn more about the ways people and organizations are using their gifts, their talents, their mission to make a difference in the world. You can tune in to News Talk 1130 on your radio, or you can listen on your cell phone via the iHeartRadio app. I also encourage you to visit our website at ellenbecker.com, where you can listen to previously aired shows, or you can also listen on demand. I encourage anyone who's interested in learning more about the topics of our conversation today to really dig in and learn all that you can so that you can go out and share it with others. It's what we're called to do. So educate yourselves in the truth and then go share it. It's a great way to be a blessing and give a blessing. Thanks for listening today and have a great day.